Of course, Beethoven would be terrifying. It'd be terrifying to spend any time with him at all. But it would be fascinating. It'd be hard to turn down that opportunity. I'm sure Haydn would have the ability to make you laugh somehow. I mean, you get that from his music. It's such funny music. There's such humor in his music that you'd imagine that an evening with Haydn would be somehow quite entertaining. But I think I would probably go for Beethoven just for the wide-ranging experience. Something like that.
Well, you have framed the Beethoven and Brahms pieces with two piano sonatas by Haydn, and I'm wondering why you decided to bookend the Beethoven and Brahms with these sonatas by Haydn.
Well, I'm at the start of a two-year series of Haydn, Beethoven, and Brahms, and my idea was the series was, well, actually, I wanted to play Haydn sonatas for quite some time, but rather than just do a series exclusively with Haydn, I thought of coming up with a way to put it in some kind of context, and came up with the idea of Brahms as being the polar opposite of Haydn in many ways. You know, with Brahms, you have this very deeply serious way of expressing things. That there's really no humor in Brahms. At least I haven't detected any so far. With Haydn, of course, Haydn is also deeply serious, but one of the big features of Haydn's music is that he makes you laugh. He throws surprises at you. He pokes you in the ribs. So how to bring these two composers together? I thought with Beethoven bagatelles, you actually have Beethoven looks in both of those directions, especially the late bagatelles, the 126, which are on this program. He does look in the direction of Brahms. He looks forward that there are many Brahmsian aspects to that. But there are also, in Beethoven's miniatures, lots of Haydnesque characteristics. You know, Beethoven also uses humor in a very different way to Haydn, but it's there. And it can be very quirkish, it can be very surprising. So, in fact, Beethoven is what binds these two very different composers together, Haydn and Brahms. So that was my idea behind the program.
What sparked a new series of recordings of Haydn's music? Why are you launching into that project?
Oh, just because I love the music. Haydn is, it's just such wonderfully inventive, creative, and engaging music. And it's not overplayed, really. When you think about it, it doesn't come up on that many concert programs. You don't see it all the time. I don't know why pianists avoid it. I mean, I haven't played much Haydn for a while, so I'm coming back to it now. But it's just such wonderful music, and you know, I think it really warrants spending some serious time with.
We had a longtime music director here in Rochester who was a Brit, a guy named Christopher Seaman, and he always used to say there's a ray of sunshine in every bar of Haydn. He loved Haydn. So it sounds like you're sort of taking listeners on a journey then from sort of sunshine into Beethoven, into Brahms, and then back to Haydn?
Yeah, that's it. I've been a bit naughty with the program with this because the second half of the program is Brahms 118. The last piece of which finishes with this sense of deep anguish, this kind of introspection, and it's really very dark. And then I finish the program. I follow that with this little Haydn G major sonata. It's not often played, but it really is just a joke. The last, it's very short, two movements. The last movement is this kind of Tom and Jerry sort of character. You know, it's it really. I thought to throw a cold towel at the audience after this deeply introspective and anguished character that you get from Brahms might be a way to do it, and to end the program with a laugh can't be too bad.
Well, for our listeners who aren't pianists, can you talk a little bit about what's going on in your mind and your heart as you switch gears from the Haydn to the Beethoven to the Brahms back to the Haydn? What's going on in your mind?
Well, You're drawing all sorts of parallels. You know, you're very, when you're there doing it in the moment, you are aware of the connections between the characters of the music and the different languages that the composers write in. So that's one thing. You're very much in the moment with all that, and that's the great thing about music. That was one of my ideas of switching from the deep seriousness of the Brahms to the quirkishness of Haydn. Immediately, you know, you just flip over, and music has this incredible ability to put you in whatever moment it chooses, really. And that was part of my idea. It's almost like an experiment in a way, in the power of music and what it can do to us. So I think what's in your mind and your heart, you're really just in the moment. You're right there with the music and what it conveys. Of course, you're thinking of all sorts of other things when you're doing it. Technical things, you're trying to stay in control. You have to be simultaneously a performer and a listener, which is often quite a challenge to be. To try to take, you know, one step away from what you're doing as you're doing it, but not be too affected by it, not to be destroyed by it. You know, you think of pieces like Schubert Winterreise, which I've played lots of times. And people are so incredibly affected by this 75-minute journey. And you see it, and of course you're affected by it too, but you're thinking of enough technical things as you go through it to keep you one side of being totally destroyed by it. So it's a mix of things, really, what's going on in your mind and in your heart. You have to steer yourself around in a very, very particular way if you're going to retain control of the quality of what you do.
I was reading a little bit about your music festival that you and your wife started, and it seems like the emphasis is a lot on feeling and passion and what musicians are most passionate about. What got you thinking along those lines?
Oh, the festival we started nearly 10 years ago, and it's a little chamber music festival. It's something we wanted to do close to home. The idea was really to just invite musicians that we like and that we admire, nice people. It's a bit like having people around for dinner for an extended weekend, and we play some music too. It's something very intimate. The venue is small, so people get the chance to feel that they really participate in what's going on. The audience, I mean. So that was all part of it. And just to do something locally, we decided would be a nice idea, because, you know, we spend the rest of our time traveling places, and to do something at home was an idea that really appealed to us. So that's what we set out to do.
Well, let me ask you about that traveling. When you come to Rochester on Monday or Sunday, I'm not sure when you're getting here, but you're going to walk into Kilburn Hall, and it's a new space and a new piano. What's your process, and what's the relationship between you and that piano? How does that play out?
Well, it depends on the piano. it can be a very easy relationship, or it can be very fraught. I've given up trying to fight against pianos that are not set up in the way that I'd ideally like them to be. And I think the best thing to do is just to play to the strengths of the instrument that you have and try to make the best of it. Of course, you want the piano to be your friend, and some pianos are more easily your friend than others, let's say. Because every pianist has their idea of sound. You know, we all have our own sound, and we want to try to get close to that and create it as much as possible, because your sound is your identity, and it's so much part of the character of the music that you play. So when you come up against a piano that feels very resistant to producing that sound, of course it creates a totally different dynamic. When you have a piano that just plays the way you want, you know, sometimes, very occasionally, you almost have the impression that the piano just plays itself, and what you have in your mind is what comes out and is what you hear. So your relationship with the piano can play out in many, many different ways, but I think when it's not ideally as you'd like it to be, it's important to take a step back and to just accept the strengths of that particular instrument. I think that's a healthier way to do it than fighting against it.
You must have a lot of stories of different pianos you've encountered. Is there one that sort of popped into your head while you were talking?
Well, I can think of a few pianos where I just had really wonderful experiences. It depends on the instrument itself, of course. It depends on the piano technician, the person that sets it up. And I can think of quite a few instances of pianos that were really wonderful experiences and from which you learn a lot. You know, you go away having learned a lot about sound and how it works and discovered something about what you want to create and what you want to produce. And of course I can think of plenty on the other side of the scale, but let's not mention those.
So as you're traveling, Paul, I'm wondering if you've had an experience in the last few weeks that has stuck with you, that something that you've shared with your friends and family that's been sort of a personal story coming out of this particular tour?
Well, not particularly, only that this tour that I've started now is very, very long and doesn't get me back home until a few days before Christmas, which is quite tough, really. So that's the first thing that pops into my mind. It's, you know, it's tough to be away for so long. But then again, you know, you're carrying such wonderful music around with you and going to such nice places that, there are many upsides to that as well.
What has been something that you've heard that has been revelatory? Feedback from the audience that has touched you?
It's always wonderful when you meet people after concerts and you can see that they've been affected by the music, because that's what this is all about. When you can see that people are really touched or moved or affected in some way, you know that it's been an experience that they'll take away. This is the thing about great music, is not disposable. It gives you an experience that lasts. It stays with you, and it doesn't. It doesn't just need to be nice or cozy or fluffy. It can be incredibly challenging. You know, it can really turn you inside out. And in many ways, it should, because that's the great power of music. It keeps us in touch with something that is, in fact, very difficult to put into words quite often. And I think when you do meet people after a performance, and you can see in their faces very clearly if it really has affected them, and you want it to affect them. When you see that, it makes it all worthwhile, because that's the whole point. That's the point of what we do.
Well, that's a lovely place to end our conversation. Thank you so much for making time for us.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Safe travels to Rochester.
Okay, thank you very much.
Paul Lewis is an internationally regarded pianist. He's British. He's going to be appearing Monday night in Kilburn Hall at the Eastman School of Music. I'm Brenda Tremblay. Thanks for listening.